So the past year, we were discussing some of the parameters of overall Isser of Mekach u'Memker on Shabbos and Yom Tov, and all kind of business transactions were off limits on Shabbos and Yom Tov, actually for a variety of reasons. The reason why we're talking about it now in the Malach of Kosev is because Rashi writes in a few places, and at least one of the reasons why Chazal prohibited Mekach u'Memker on Shabbos is because of Gezeira Atu Kosev. We're afraid since business very often has writing involved, is Gezeira Mishum Kosev. Rashi in other places highlights other reasons. Either it's part of the Pesukim in the Navi Yishayam, so Chetz Chabadah B'Davar, or Rashi in another place points out to the Pesukim in the end of Sefer Nehemiah. We call it Sefer Nehemiah, it's really Sefer Ezra. Halachically, it's really considered to be almost like one Sefer. But the end of Sefer Ezra slash Nehemiah, so it describes the fact that there was a business that was taking place, stores were open, rampant in Yerushalayim, there was full of Shabbos in the beginning of Ba'isheni, and how strong the Pesukim come down against that. So it's clear from those Pesukim in Tanakh that business is also in Shabbos and Yom Tov. So again, whatever the exact reason for the Isser is, it's clearly prohibited. And again, we've been almost lumping it together with the regular dinim of Ksiva as Gzer Shem Yichtav. So there are certain activities that are not 100% clear where they fit into in the model. Are they really Mekach u'Memker in the classic sense of the word? And that's really going to set the stage for today's shiur. A whole array of different activities that we're not quite sure where they fit into. Should they be included in this Isser or not? So one of the things that's mentioned in the Mishnah in Maseches Beit says that a makdishin, one is not allowed to be makdish something on Shabbos and Yom Tov. That's also considered to be part of the gezeira. And the reason being, when you're makdish something, so you're transferring ownership of it. You're giving it to the Beis Hamikdash. As the Gemara says in another context, mali machol hedjet mali machol shemayim. What's the difference whether I sell something to you as an individual, I sell it to the Beis Hamikdash? Being makdish itself is an act of mekach u'memker. There is a big machlokes of Rishayim about the following shaila. What if a person is not makdish an item to the Beis Hamikdash? What if a person simply obligates themselves to give X amount of money? Or not so much in terms of money to Beis Hamikdash, but to give money to tzedakah, to a yeshiva, to a shul, to a mosad. A person dedicates, takes a net that he's going to give X amount of money. Is that considered to be a problem of a makdishin on Shabbos? So there was some Rishayim who said yes. You're not allowed to take such a nether on Shabbos. The Gemara says that you're allowed to discuss tzedakah funds on Shabbos. You're allowed to like have a meeting at the Gaboy tzedakah, have to sit around and discuss how they're going to do this, how they're going to do that, how they're going to raise money. So that you're allowed to do. Just talking about tzedakah would have been a violation of talking about your business. You're not allowed to have a business meeting on Shabbos, but talking about tzedakah business is okay because that's what the Gemara says. So cheftzuchah bedabedavar, cheftzuchah surim, cheftzuchah shimayim mutarim. That dvarim shechafotzim that are included in Yoni Shemayim and Yoni Mitzvah are considered to be permissible on Shabbos and Yom Tov. We just listened. That's what I'm saying. And again, for the Sefer Torah. I think that maybe the last Sefer Torah coming back in for today. I think that's the last one. Okay, we'll see. Maybe more around the bend. Okay, so talking about in Yanei Tzedakah is permissible, but actually dedicating money to give to Tzedakah may be more problematic because when I'm dedicating money, when I'm promising, I'm taking it to give money, so that may be a violation of an act of Mekach u'Memker. And other Rishonim say no, that's not considered to be the same as being makdish for the following reason. When you're makdish, so you're makdish a specific item. So a person says, I'm giving this animal to the Beis Hamikdash, I'm giving this table, I'm giving this piece of wood to the Beis Hamikdash. So there's an item that the Mekach u'Memker is chal on. Whereas a person says, I'm just giving a general obligation, I'm obligating myself personally to give $1,000 to the shul. So there's no item per se, so there's no Mekach u'Memker involved. So one of the questions that's posed, against that split that some Rishonim have, is that the Mishnah speaks about e makdish ve ma'arichin. Mishnah says that not only you're not allowed to be makdish an item on Shabbos, you're not allowed to be ma'arich on Shabbos either. Erichin is the psukim in the end of Parshas Bichu Kosai, where depending on what an age of and gender of a person, every person has a certain halachic value. So if a person says erki alai, or erich ploni alai, so they have to give X amount, whatever it says in the Chumash. So the Mishnah says, Ema Richen on Shabbos also. You're not allowed to take a net of Erichen on Shabbos for the same reason as the Mekach u'Memker. So some of the Rishonim point out, there also there's no specific item. There I'm just giving a value of money. And that's still a problem, to which other Rishonim respond, no, there it is considered to be like your makdish, an item. What's the item? Yourself. Now, again, it's not really hektish. If a person says, Erki alai, so the person doesn't become osam hanah, the person doesn't need pidgin, that's not what's going on. Erki alai is a neder for an amount of money corresponding to what your value is. But since that value is corresponding to a specific gavro or slash chefzer, so to speak, so then that is considered like a mechel memka. So it's a very lumda shavon and erichin. And erichin is not just abaned the biyam. Erichin means that in effect you're giving yourself to the base of mikdash, and then you're quasi being redeeming yourself from the base of mikdash. Again, it's not a perfect moshel. It's not really true. The person is not also bano till he gives the money, but the model is there. And therefore, it's closer, resembles mechel memka than just a regular ned that a person can give $1,000 to a tzedakah. So again, the bottom line is the machlekes of Rishonim about are you permitted to take this kind of darim to give money to the shul, to the yeshiva on Shabbos. But many, many shuls are mekel about this. All the shuls that make mishaberachs are in effect mekel on this. There is a further question in the postgame. Even according to those who are mekel, that you're allowed to give these nedarim on Shabbos and Yom Tov, they're not really considered to be mekel memker. What if there is something that I do acquire for the money? Now, if it's a mamish an item, a real tangible item, that's one thing. But what if it's not really a tangible item? What if it's almost like it's chus to do something? So let's say, for example, a person buys an aliyah, or a person buys a mafteh, a person buys a taresa, those kinds of things. So according to those who are mekel, you're allowed to just stop and give money to an institution. You're allowed to take a net to give money to an institution. Would you be permitted to in a sense connect that neder to give the money to receiving some kind of zchus, some kind of privilege to do something? That's a further machlekes in the poskim. So the minig is lahakol on that also. All the shuls that have that auction of aliyahs and all the shuls that auction of atareis, all of the above. So now those are all assuming that there's nothing really tangible here. There's nothing real here. There's no real mechel memke here, and that would not be included in the general prohibition. But again, not everybody agreed to that. There is a big question in the Rishonim when we talk about the iser of being marked the items, being marked the items on Shams and Yontif, whether the chalos of hefker is included in this. Is a person permitted to be mafker things on Shabbos and Yontif? So a lot of this discussion revolves around Erev Pesach. This year actually comes up again. We have Erev Pesach chalos from Shabbos. The Gemara says explicitly that you're allowed to do bittul chametz on Shabbos. So we have Erev Pesach chalos from Shabbos. So you try to get rid of all your chametz from before Shabbos, whatever little drops of chametz that you have left. You can eat your meals on Shabbos, so then you eat, and then it's possible that there may be a little bit of chametz left at the end, so you're going to do bittul chametz. So the Gemara says the Farish, you're allowed to do bittul chametz on Shabbos. So there is a big machlekes that we've shown him what exactly bittul chametz is all about, just in terms of a chalos and dinei bamanos. Those were with us in the Pesachim Shurim in Kol HaBoker. So we talked about this a little bit. Hopefully, we're going to come back to this at great length as the year continues. So there is basically a machlekes harishonim in Rashi and Tosfos and Avdal and Maseches Pesachim what bittul chametz is trying to accomplish. Everybody agrees there's a chalos of bittul chametz. It's a mishnah, it's a gemara b'feirish that bittul chametz works min haTorah. So Rashi learns that bittul chametz is a fulfillment of the mitzvah of tashbisu. The Torah says ach b'yom harishon tashbisu sami bateichem. You have to be mashbis your chametz. Rashi is quick to point out that the Torah doesn't say tabar as a chametz. Doesn't say to destroy the chametz. It says tashbisu. What is the translation of the word tashbisa? So Rashi says tashbasa the leiv zui yashbasa. That simply being mashbis the chametz in one's heart, so that's considered to be tashbisa. And Tosfos disagrees with Rashi. Tosfos says no, it's not true that bittul chametz, just declaring or thinking that the chametz is kafir the ara, that it's a bottle of vutal, that's not really a mitzvah of tashbisa. Tosfos claims that tashbisa means a lashon of destruction. You have to physically destroy it, maybe through burning, maybe through other ways, but according to Tosfos, bittul chametz is not a mitzvah of tashbisu at all. What is bittul chametz? Bittul chametz is a circumvention of Rabbi Matzah. Bittul chametz is the being mafkir, you're declaring your chametz to be ownerless, and once it's ownerless, so mamele you're not over by Rabbi Matzah, because the Torah says, le'ira l'cha, shechoya taroya, v'al taroya shalacherim, you're allowed to have a goyis chametz in your rishus, you're allowed to have hektishes chametz in your rishus, you're allowed to have hefkes chametz in your rishus as well. So this is the raging machlekes, and so much of the Torah is in the beginning of Maseches Pesachim revolves around this machlekes, Rashi and Tosfos. Rashi holds that it's not based on Hefker, it's based on Exeris HaKosov Tashbisu. The Rashi and the Ram holds the same way, and Balei Tosfos hold no, that that Bittul is not part of Tashbisu. Tashbisu means physical destruction, but Bittul simply is a being mafkid the chametz, and then Mimel is not yours. So the Ramban at the beginning of Pesachim has many, many questions against Tosfos, and the question that's relevant for us is as follows. The Ramban says, if the Balei Tosfos are right, that Bittul chametz is mitam hefker, why are you allowed to be mafkir chametz and Shabbos? How could the Gemara say the favor that our Pesach has b'Shabbos? So mevatel, believe me, just mevatel chametz, and it's done, it's finished. Who gave you a right to be mevatel chametz on Shabbos? Is not a violation of mekach u'memkir? That's the Ramban's famous question against the Shittas and Tosfos. So what would Tosfos respond to that? So Tosfos would respond one of two ways. Either Tosfos would respond that the very premise of the Ramban is incorrect, that the Taka is no iser of being mafkir on Shabbos and Yom, that was never included in the din of Mekach u'Memkir, or maybe the Balei Tosfos would respond that generally speaking, to be mafkir things on Shabbos and Yom Tov would be problematic. Maybe b'makom mitzvah they lifted that prohibition. We have to figure out why that should be so. So those are two very, very different tracks to go down. Either Tosfos definitely says you're allowed to be mafkir on Shabbos, no question about it. Tosfos definitely holds that bittul is b'tam hefker. So how do you explain that phenomenon? So either Tosfos holds that the ikaron you're allowed to be mafkir on Shabbos. There never was anything else about being mafkir on Shabbos. But the Zolds know that there is something wrong with it under normal circumstances, but here it's permissible because of the Makom Mitzvah Shavuot. So that's a little bit unclear what Tosfos' response was. Do we have any rayas, any rayas from the Gemara? So there were a few Gemaras that sound like it's okay to be mafkir on Shabbos. There are a few Gemaras that sound a little bit against the Ramban. There is a Gemara on Shabbos in the 16th parak where the Mishnah talks about if there's a fire that breaks out, so we spoke about this many times, there's a fire that breaks out. So in the days of Chazal, houses were very far apart from one another. So as long as everybody get out of the house, there's no real pekuch nefesh. The fire's not going to spread. Not going anywhere. A guy lives in a farmhouse 10 miles away from the next house. So his whole house will burn down. And sure, he gets everybody out safely and he'll suffer a big hefsid. Mama, what are you going to do? You can't extinguish the fire in Shabbos. This din doesn't apply to Manazel. The place came right, that we live in cities, we live close to each other, and fire spread much easier, and if everything is a chashash pekuch nefesh. But in the olden days, in theory, you can isolate the problem, isolate the fire, and it wouldn't be a problem of pekuch nefesh. So the Mishnah says that not only are you not allowed to extinguish the fire in Shabbos, you're not even allowed to go into the house and try to grab things and try to save things from the burning house, because Chazal were afraid that if we let you go in, you're going to start to try to put the fire out. So that is a derabbanan called matzav and adleika that appears in the 16th pack of Shabbos. So Chazal gave a few exceptions to that rule. A few things that you are allowed to save. Certain things are so important that they were willing to lift that gezeirah derabbanan of matzav and adleika. So that's how the 16th pack of Shabbos starts out, called kisvei hakodesh. That if there's a sefer Torah in the house, you're allowed to run into the house to grab the sefer Torah. If there are other sefer nevi m'ksuvim, etc. It's a whole sugya in the beginning of the 16th pack of Shabbos about the special heta that they gave you, you're allowed to save the kisvei hakodesh. And then the Mishnah says, you're allowed to save food for Shabbos. The guys otherwise aren't going to have Shabbos meals. So you're allowed to run it and save your children, run it and save your chalas, save your whatever you have to save. That would also be acceptable. It's in that sugya that the Gemara talks about all the details of Suda Shabbos. The entire sugya of Gimel Sudas B'Shabbos appears in that daf in Perikol Kisvei, where it talks about the Hetech, as I gave you, what would otherwise be an Issa Derabban, Ma'atzab and Adleika. So Chazal lifted that Gezeirah in order to enable you to be able to eat. So then the Mishnah talks about, what if I have enough food for myself, but I want to be able to grab food. Other people, I feel bad. All my food is going to go up in smoke. So I have a lot of neighbors who are hungry who would love to get some food out of this fire. So the Mishnah talks about letting the other neighbors coming in as well, announcing, Kol HaMatzi Yavi Yatzil. I put up a brother shul and I say, everyone quick, the house is burning down. Everyone go grab your cholent and kugels quickly before there's nothing left. So the Mishnah talks about that possibility. So Ritva and that Gemara has a comment. Ritva says, how can I do that? By making such an announcement that everyone come and take, that's like hefker basically. I'm basically being mafker all my food on Shabbos. Isn't that goofy? And it's a derabbanan to be mafker food on Shabbos. So Ritva writes, nah. That's not called being mafkir food. The food is basically hefker anyway. It's going up in flames. Says the Ritva, if I take a good pot of cholent that nothing's happening to, it's a perfectly safe pot of cholent, and I put it out on the street and say, is this hefker? Everyone come and take it. That's a problem in Shabbos. That would be a mekichum hefker. But that's not what I'm doing. I'm taking something that anyway, it's about to be destroyed. It's about to go up in flames in 2 minutes from now. So it's already hefker. It's already hukmuf gomeyelov. So I'm just simply letting people take what is basically has become, in a sense, objectively hefker anyway. So the Rivas says that Gemara doesn't seem to indicate necessarily that that it's actually mutter mamash legamri to be mafker on Shabbos. There are other Gemaras that that do seem to point in a direction also that it's mutter to be mafker on Shabbos. Other Gemaras that seem to be against the Shita Sei Ramban. There is a Gemara also in Masechet Shabbos that talks about whether certain items are considered to be mutter or not. Generally, the rule is that something that's not usable. Let's say you have food, but the food is not edible. Food is not usable for any purpose. So then it's considered to be muktzah machos gufo. You're not allowed to move it for anything. So the Mishnah speaks about it. If you have something that's tevel, if you have fruits and vegetables that come from Eretz Yisrael, produce Eretz Yisrael that hasn't had the proper terms of ma'aseh taken off of, so those items are considered to be tevel, and you're not allowed to eat them, and you're not allowed to be ma'afer terms of ma'aseh on Shabbos, and you're on for other reasons. So since there's no way to rectify this problem, so I have these tomatoes, I have these peppers that are sitting on my table, I can't do anything with them. I can't eat them, I can't be mafresh, I can't use them for anything. So they're mukta mamash, so tevel is considered to be an absolute outright mukta. So the Mishnah says that even though tevel is considered to be outright mukta, but d'mai is not considered to be mukta. What is d'mai? D'mai means that I bought some produce from an Amma Aret, someone who's not so careful in all areas of halacha, and I'm not 100% sure whether he took off the proper maaseres. So the Gemara says that in the days of the early Tanoim, back in the days of Bayis Sheni, so they made a census. They sent messages throughout all of Eretz Yisrael. In the days of Yechon and Kohen Gadol, they sent a census throughout all of Eretz Yisrael to try to get a sense whether people are really being mafresh shuvos and ma'aseres properly. And the numbers that they came up with were that almost everybody was separating truma properly. That wasn't really a concern. But ma'aser rishon, people weren't as careful about. The reason being that trumas are the bakadosh, kohanim, truma, tuma, tara. So people took that much more serious. Then ma'aser rishon is not really kadosh anyway. It's only the mamonis that goes to the levi. So people weren't being as careful with it. And people were not as careful to be mafresh the problem ma'aser. Now, if you eat something that ma'aser rishon wasn't taken off of, that's tevel gomim in a Torah. That's chai misa b'shemayim. So the halacha is that the freshest ma'aser is very, very important. But in people's misunderstanding of the halacha, they weren't taking it as seriously. So the Gemara says that it's not that most people weren't taking it seriously. Most people thought were taking it seriously. Even in the days of Yechon going on, people were not up to par in terms of everything, but they were still separating ma'aseres properly. But there was a minority of people who weren't. Versus Rov Ami Aris Ma'aser Mim. Most of the people who weren't even so careful in other areas of Halakha Nesah, but they were still taking ma'aseres, but there were some that weren't. So because the numbers weren't so good, so Yechon Kangala made a takana, and Beis Din HaGadol confirmed this takana, that you're not allowed to eat demai, you're not allowed to trust that I'm Aretz, unless the person is a chaver, unless the person has already been established that he's a Shamatar Mitzvah, he's observed to move a tower properly, observes to those bars properly. Just time a regular after the street comes and tells you that he separated Maestris, you're not allowed to believe him. You're allowed to believe him vis-a-vis Truma, because most people, the overwhelming majority of people were doing Truma, but since there was a significant amount of people not separating Maestris, so therefore they made a special takana called Demai. So Min HaTorah, Demai is not really a problem. Min HaTorah, you can rely on the Rov, that Rov Ami Arts Ma'asimim. So if any given Pradvist is sitting on your table, and the Amar Oret said that he separated Ma'aseh, so Midaraisi you're allowed to believe him, Midirabbanan not allowed him. Since the issue of Demai was only a Chumah Midirabbanan, Chazal built certain kulas into this issue of Midirabbanan. One of the kulas that they built into it was that Machinis Aniyim Demai, that if somebody is poor, so then they're allowed to eat Demai. If Demai would have been a real Chashash Midaraisa, we wouldn't have been making it, since it's only Midirabbanan anyway. Since Minatur, anyway, we have a Rove. It's only midrabanan. Say, hey, mom, hey, mom. So Chazal lifted this prohibition midrabanan. B'makom aniyim. Machinas aniyim demai. It comes the Gemara in Shabbos and says, since the din is that machinas aniyim demai, therefore, it is possible for me to eat demai also. Now again, I'm not an ani, but I can become an ani very, very quickly. I can be mafku all of my nechassim. So since in theory I can be mafku all of my nechassim, and in theory I can eat demai. So therefore, demai is not considered to be muktzah. Something is only considered to be muktzah when it's totally, completely off limits. It's not usable, not feasible, not practical to use it in any shape or form. So that's considered to be a davish on muktzah. So tevel gom or tevel deraisa is muktzah mamish because I can't eat it the way it is. I can't be mafresh. It's in my hands are tied, so it's muktzah mamish. But demai is not true. Demai is, my hands are not tied. Demai, I could eat the demai if I just finagle a little bit and I'm afke ben chosim, and then I go and eat the demai, so I can eat demai for lunch today. So therefore, it's not considered to be muktzumam, therefore I could use it. So the Rishayim point out from this Gemara, the Meiri and this Gemara says, what do you mean you could be mafkir? Who says you'll have to be mafkir on Shabbos? Isn't there an issel hafkir on chosim on Shabbos? So the answer is, no, there is no such issel. There never was such an issel. That lahafkir and chosim on Shabbos is not a problem. But it's mutter to be mafkir. So again, even though the Ramban thought that there is an issa to lahafkir and chosim, that's why the Ramban ultimately rejected the Bali Atosis. And the Ramban says that there's no way that tashbisu could mean, I'm sorry, there's no way that bittul could mean hafkir, because then it wouldn't be mutter on Shabbos. But a whole group of Rishayim point out that it's not so simple. It's a low pashut at all that there should be a real iser lahafkir nechosav. What should this depend upon? Is there an iser lahafkir nechosav? Not iser. There's a lot of, what's the lumdus? So again, without getting totally into the dinim mamonos part, there is a big question. Again, we'll speak hopefully a lot about this more in Kol HaBoker in the weeks coming up. We'll get the Rashi and Tosfos Daf Daled. But there's a big question about how do you view the institution of hefker? When I'm mafkir something, what exactly is happening? Is hefker like a hakuna? Like I'm selling it? There's a new entity. There's a corporation called hefker. It's registered Mr. Ownerless. There is an entity called Ownerless Property. And when I'm mafkir something, so I'm really changing rishus, I'm taking it out of my property and giving it over to a new entity, a new chalashem. Not all that different than hektish. The same way that when I'm makdish something, so I'm taking it out of my...
Join the meeting.
Taking it out of my rishus and putting it into Yadim's rishus, into basic mikdash's rishus. So the same is true. When I take something out of my rishus and I put it into Hefka's rishus, that's also considered to be hakuna, and that will be included in a chashash, a mekchem hemke. Well, bichlal, that's not at all what's going on. That's not at all what Hefka is all about. Hefka really belongs to me. In the end of the day, it's still mine. It's just that once I committed myself to this statement that anybody can come and take it, so I'm not allowed to back out from my words. If I want to go ahead and re-zeicha on it, if I want to go and pick up the hefker and re-zeicha, I'm no worse than anybody else. I'm allowed to do that. But what I'm not allowed to do is I'm not allowed to say it's hefker, and then 10 minutes later, I say, no, it's not really hefker, just kidding. That's what the Rambam writes in Uchas Nedarim, that when a person is mafkir something, if he tries to back out from his words, not to be re-zeicha, he tries just simply negate what he said, that smacks of a violation of al yachal devarai. It's like a neder. The Rambam puts all the dinim of hefker into Berg Beis and Uchas Nedarim. But the Rambam seems to hold that Nadarim said that Hefker is not really Hakuna. Hefker is an Isser Chazara. It's an Isser Dibur. You're not allowed to be Mbachal Diburcha. You're not allowed to be Mbachal Diburcha. But in terms of a real formal Hakuna, it's not really a formal Hakuna. So that's really a loaded question what Hefker is. Charik Chleisakol, there is the Machlekis Nirishainim. Are you allowed to be Mafkir on Shabbos and Yom Kippur? So going back to our discussion about Tosfos, so Tosfos says that Bitul Chametz is Hefker and Bitul Chametz is Mutar on Shabbos. We're going to do this. A few months from now, Pesach Chalas B'Shabbos, and we're going to finish our eating breakfast, eating our shoshos, whatever it is, 10 o'clock in the morning, and we're going to have a couple of crumbs left over here and there, so we're going to say, Kol Chamir V'Chamir, we're going to be Mevat Allah Chametz. So according to Rashi, that Rashi and Ram, that's great. It's a bit of Tashbisu. According to Taisus, it's not Tashbisu. It's a circumvention of by Rabbi Matze, because I mean Mafkir the Chametz. What right do I have to do that? So either the Balei Taisus hold that you're allowed to be Mafkir, either that's one possibility, or maybe Balei Taisus hold that normally you're not allowed to be mafkir in Shabbos and Yontif, but maybe in Makom Mitzvah, they lifted that prohibition. Why did they lift Bishurim? We saw that Rishayim would say that although you're not allowed to give him a ton on Shabbos and Yontif, you are allowed to give him a ton of Makom Mitzvah. That's Gemara in the second Berakha Beitzur. The Gemara talks about a person who forgot to make an Erev Tavshilin, so he's not allowed to cook. So maybe what he could do is he can give the raw food to somebody else to cook on his behalf. He could be makne kimcha le'achirim. He can give the flour. He wants to make challah, but he didn't make an erev, so he has to be makne, he has to give his matana, his flour, to somebody else. So the Mordechai in the spot says, what do you mean he's going to give him a matana of his flour? He can give his raw chicken, give his raw, his potatoes to somebody else to cook for him. He says, how are you allowed to give him a matana on Yantif? So the Mordechai writes, that b'mokom mitzvah, b'mokom sikus Yantif, b'mokom tzerich Yantif, so it's okay to give him matana. What does that mean? So since when are we not there mekcha memcha just because of mitzvah? You can't, it's true that we let you give as a gift. I can give my luv and esek to somebody as matana sahach, in order to use it on sukkahs, but I can't keep my store open on even if it's a farm store, I can't keep my luv and esek store open on Yom Tov to charge money. So what's the pshat? Why is matana mutter? So the Yochashochan explains, because the original Isser of Mechamemka really should not have included Matana. None of the reasons of that prohibited Mechamemka really carry over to simply giving a bunch of gifts to one person to another. But the Isumba of Mechamemka, that makes sense. When I'm selling you something, so I'm going to write down, what did I sell you? I need a receipt. I have to remember, you have to pay me yet. Credit, whatever. Whatever it is, buying and selling lends itself to writing. I give you a gift. I don't write down who I gave the gift to. I give you a gift. I give you a gift. I'm finished. So the reason of Shemi Yichtav doesn't really apply. Or let's say the reason of Tzechetz Chabedah B'Dobar. You're not supposed to be involved in your business weekday kind of pursuits. So that I understand why I can't have my store open. And then I can't sell you. Why can't I give you a gift? I want to give you a safest gift. Why can't I give you a gift? So the emes is that the reasons that Asa Mechel Memke don't really apply to Matana. So why am this Matana Asar? So the Chashuchah explains, it must have been almost like an extended it's almost like a since it touches a little bit, since it smacks a little bit, it gives a little bit of a resemblance to Mechamemker, so they threw it in for good luck as well. But in terms of the real Issa, it shouldn't really apply to Matana. So it says there, Chashuch, and that explains why Chazal were very, very makil to when it's Mimakom Mitzvah, that it's going to be okay. If it would be a real Issa, a real bona fide, I can't keep my store open, I can't keep my farm store open on Shabbos, but I can if I have to give you a safe you can use, if you're not going to use it on Shabbos, that's not a Mimakom Mitzvah. I say, if I want to give a bar mitzvah gift to the boy, I want to give him a shabur to the bar mitzvah boy. So if I know he's going to open up the shabur and start learning them that afternoon, so it's at the gomer, I give it to him. But in just in case I'm nervous, and just in case the boy doesn't get around to learning from it that afternoon, so that's why we try to follow the practice of being exactly the gift to him from before Shabbos, give it to somebody else on his behalf before Shabbos begins. But if I knew that he's going to use it, so then it's mutlach etchila to give it to him as a gift, because that's a matan, l'tzarech mitzvah. So that idea of the Ruch HaShulchan may help us be hefker as well. That hefker really shouldn't be called mechel memker. It doesn't really have the reasons. When was the last time when you mafka something, you write down, keep a note, who's writing that? I'm writing down, hefker's writing, who's writing down, who's keeping notes of who's being mafka things? So the gezeirah shem yichtav doesn't apply. Elah, what you worry about? Mitzah cheftzacha. Look up mitzah cheftzacha. What does hefker have to do with my business? Hefker is not a business transaction. And putting something out in the middle of the street, it's not really business. So at the end of the day, just as matana shouldn't really be also hefker, also shouldn't really be also elohim. Chazal included it, they threw it along for good luck because it smacks a little bit of mechel memker. So those kinds of secondary isurim of quasi nirik and mechel memker, not the real mekoy, they lifted by mekom mitzvah. So maybe that's the beer and tizer. So when all the dust settles, you're allowed to do bittul chometz on erpes chas b'shabbos. Going to Rashi, it was never kashrut altogether. Bittul chometz is not hefker. Even according to Taisus, it's mutter either because all of hefker is mutter on Shabbos and Yontif, because it's not really a mechir altogether, or at least makom mitzvah, it's going to be mutter. We have other activities that are also presumably off limits in Shabbos and Yontif, also because they fall into this quasi category of mechir memger. So one of them is pidyon haben. So here it's interesting because pidyon haben actually does not appear in the Mishnah. The Mishnah talks about a lot of different things that you can't do. We spoke about you can't buy and sell, and you can't be Makadosh and Isha, and you can't be Makdash, can be Marich. The Mishnah does not say you can't do Pidyon HaBen on Shabbos and Yom Tov, but all the Rishonim assume that that's a problem. Now, we usually associate Pidyon HaBen with giving money, so what's the problem? The money is Muktzah. The answer is you don't have to give money. The Mishnah says you can give Shavu Kesef also. As long as you give something that's worth the value of money, that's perfectly okay. If I want to give the Kohen, 5 shekel worth of svarim. I want to give him a 5 shekel worth of potato kugel with the chum. So I could do that also. Make it very, very Shabbos stick. So you theoretically could do that. Wouldn't be a violation of muktzah. And the question is, why not? What the Mechichel Memker is all about. So there seem to be two different approaches in the Gedolei HaPoskim as to what exactly the concern is. What is it about Pidyon HaBen that we don't like? What is it about Pidyon HaBen that gives off that resembles a business transaction? Why isn't it just simply a mitzvah bi'alma? So there is a Bir HaGra in Yerodeya, in Simon Shehei, where the Simon about Pidyon HaBen with the Bir HaGra understands that Pidyon HaBen is basically like a Piron HaChov. It's basically like paying back a debt. The Torah says that you owe X amount of money to the Kohen. It's not really like a mitzvah. It's like putting on tefillin. It's really dini mamonis. It's really more of a chayshim mishpat than it is a din of archam in your day. You have an obligation, dini mamonis, to pay the Kohen. That's why the Gra explains that he had trouble with home achleikis in the Gedolei HaPoskim about, can I do a pidyon haben on behalf of somebody else? We spoke about this many, many times. let's say it comes to my attention that there's somebody in the community who doesn't have a pidyon ben. So what do I do about that? So if the person's over by mitzvah, he should do it himself. What if he's under by mitzvah? The father's not around, the father's not Jewish, the father's not here, whatever it is. The father, there's no father around to talk to. So the question is, I have this five-year-old boy, and I know he hasn't had a pidyon ben. Should I do something about it or not? So this is a big, big machlokes at Paiskim. So the Ramah says that there's nothing you can do about it. Ramah says that pidyon ben must be done either by the father or after bar mitzvah by the child himself. Nobody else can step up to the plate and do it. And even if somebody will try to do it, it's not going to take effect anyway. And even if the Ramah is the Yedi Chiddush, Ramah says, even if the person was appointed as a shliach, even if the father's in the North Pole and he calls you up and says, listen, do me a favor, do pidyon ben on my behalf. My kids, so the Ramah says that also doesn't work. The Ramah says pidyon ben must be the money handed from the father to the kohen, or from the bechor himself when he turns by mitzvah to the kohen. Nothing more, nothing less. That's the only way to do pidyon ben. So many poskim disagree with the Ramah. Many poskim say there is no such halacha. That why wouldn't you say shluch shalom kemaisu here? So the poskim discuss that what if nobody appoints you as a shliach, the father's not around, and the kid is 5 years old. So I want to do it on my own. Without being appointed by a shaliach. So that's a further machlokes. Again, according to the Ramah, it's a moot discussion. Even if you are a shaliach, it's not going to work. But according to everyone else who disagrees and says shlichus would work, would this also work? So that's a big machlokes, the Taz and the Shach. Everybody gets into the discussion about this. Do you say zach derem shalom b'fan of here? Is it chila katan? Is it a real zachiyah? Is it chutz gama? A lot of tayrus in your dash in Simin Shinhei about whether this pidyon ben would be good. So the Vilna Gaon writes, and he doesn't understand what everybody's talking about. He doesn't understand the Ramah, doesn't understand the Taz, doesn't understand the Shach. Says the Vilna Gaon, he thinks the whole discussion is not correct. He says, of course, pidyon ben works through somebody else, no matter what. Not because of Zoch Lem Shlo Befonov, but because it's Parecha V'Shechaveri. Let's say I owe money to Reuven. I owe money to the IRS. And somebody wants to be a nice guy and send in a payment to my behalf. It's okay. But the IRS, Echpatlam, who pays my taxes? Is it, if I owe $1,000 to somebody, the guy couldn't care less with the IPS. Somebody else, as long as he gets his money back, what's the difference? So as long as the chov was parua, as long as somebody paid on behalf of Pliny, so that's considered to be pirona chayv. So the Gura says he doesn't understand what's everyone talking about whether it's shlichus, whether it's zechiah, yeah, zechiah lekat. He said, it's parecha v'shechaverin. He said, if I go up the bat for somebody else and I pay back the chayv, of course the chov is parua. So says the Gros, since the whole mitzvah is to make sure the chov is parua. I made sure the chov is parua. So of course the other guy is done. Of course he's cleared. How did the Gros know that pidyon ben is simply a pirona hachov? He has a right from Gemara Kedushin. The Gemara says, let's say a person doesn't want to do the mitzvah of pidyon ben. So the Gemara says, I'll take away his property. His property is nechasim shubadim. Let's say he had property and then he sold the property to somebody else. The basement go off to the sole property. They go off to the property and lean on it. They can go off to nechasim shubadim. So the Gemara says, if you're going after Nechas Mishubadim, that's Dina Mamlis, that's Cheshem Mishpat, that's Piron HaChayiv. So that was the sheet of the Gemara. So according to the Gemara, that Pidyon HaBen is fundamentally a Piron HaChayiv, then I understand why that's not acceptable in Shabbos and Yom. I can't pay back Chayivis, I can't pay back Chayiv in Shabbos and Yom. Even if it doesn't involve of money. Let's say I borrow something from somebody, I want to pay him back in objects. I can't do that either. You know, that'd be Parech Chayiv. That's a business type of activity. So according to the Gemara, the Pidyon HaBen is not so much religious, it's more monetary, as Piron HaChayiv, and I understand full well why it can't be done in Shabbos and Yom. But not everybody buys into that model of the Bira Gemara. Others suggest that maybe there is more of a mitzvah angle, there's a different dimension to Pidyon HaBen. It's more than just a Piron HaChayiv, it's different than Piron HaChayiv. That's the case, so why should it be off limits in Shabbos and Yom? So again, it doesn't say professionally tomorrow it's off limits, but all the Rishonim agree it's off limits. Shulchan Aruch quotes unequivocally, you can't do a pidyon ben in Shabbos. So if you go down the Gros model, I understand. If you go down other models, it becomes a little bit more problematic. Hopefully that's Shabbos next year. Again, I'm not exactly sure. We'll keep you posted as the week goes on where and when and what venue the next year will be in. But hopefully Mitzvah will continue with the sugya, so we'll go back to the other side as to why pidyon ben should be off limits. What does that tell us a little bit more about the pidyon ben? So Mitzvah will try to put the final touch on that next week, and then continue to move on through our sugya. Okay, Mitzvah, what a wonderful day. Good Chodesh, everybody. Hopefully Mitzvah will be in touch.